Okay.
There we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, adequate notice of this meeting is required by Chapter 231, PL 1975. It has been provided by a public notice on January 8, 2016, which was posted on the bulletin board at the Roosevelt Post Office and in the Borough Hall. The notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Would you kindly call the roll?
Ms. Boner.
Here.
Mr. Uncle-Lazare.
Here.
Ms. Lapode.
Here.
Ms. Malkin.
Here.
Mr. Tickton.
Here.
Mayor Allentown.
Here. Just a couple of quick things. I sent an email to Mary Tullis, which I hope she got. The last time she was here, she was asking about the white stuff on the road, which I incorrectly identified as salt because I had the dates wrong. Apparently, there was some type of horse race, and they marked the trail with flour. So what she was seeing across the road was flour, not salt.
Still a baking ingredient.
Still a baking ingredient, yes, indeed.
Bring some yeast and then we're in business.
Probably safer. There's an organization called Harbor House, and they are running a bike run. Harbor House, for their 20th anniversary, they provide apparently the only shelter for homeless, abused, and neglected youth, ages 10 to 21, in Monmouth and Ocean County. What they're looking for are people who want to ride, or people who want to manage the way stations, the water, whatever. Whoever the champion is expected to raise $750. If we find one, I think we should all chip in. And before you volunteer, note that the riders pedal an average of 85 miles a day. So I've already sent this on to Fletcher. If any of you are interested in volunteering or want more information, it's up here. The only other item is I know that Councilwoman Malkin mentioned that the fire department was not going to be able to do the 4th of July. I think we're going to have to work on that. I would point out, though, that they had said that they wanted to give us as much advance notice as possible, and they have agreed to help with the picnic. They just don't have the resources to actually operate it, having or set it up, having done that before. Anybody like to move to approve the minutes of March 14th?
So
moved. Do we have a second?
Second.
Ms. Boner.
Abstain.
Mr. Impelazzari.
Abstain.
Ms. Lapode.
Aye.
Ms. Malkin.
Aye.
Mr. Tickton.
Aye.
Anybody like to move the consent agenda?
So moved.
Mary, missed your public comment on the consent.
Public comment on the consent.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes,
I did, went right over it. Do we have any comment from the public on the payment of bills? There being none?
We have a temporary.
Oh, we have a new addition. Okay.
CFO gave that to me tonight.
Okay. My apologies. It's more than the payment of bills. We're also authorizing temporary emergency appropriations for
$500.
Bringing total emergency resolutions in 2016 to $119,870.
What is the reason for doing?
The training that the council members took.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
So that's money going to us?
No. It's money going from you.
Oh, it was JIF is the money that comes to us. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now that we've confused this thoroughly, any comments from the public? There being none, let's please call the roll.
Okay. Well, we need a motion and a second.
Motion.
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
I'm just second. Moving too fast tonight.
You are correct. And who seconded?
Jill.
Jill.
Thank you. Ms. Boner.
Aye.
Mr. Impelazzari.
Aye.
Ms. Lapode.
Aye.
Ms. Malkin.
Aye.
Mr. Tickton.
Aye.
And we now move to reports of council committees. Mr. Impelazzari.
Okay. Big Branch pickup is scheduled for April 25th. This is going to
coincide with the invasive species cleanup that the Environmental Committee is going to be doing. Funding for that is coming, some of it at least, is coming from the Clean Communities, so it's not borough money. No date has been set for the big garbage pickup yet, but that's scheduled, will be scheduled for sometime in May. We've been still in discussion with Hightstown about leaf pickup, whether we need to do it in the spring. It seems to me fall would probably be a better time, but if anybody's got any other ideas, let me know. That would be about $1,400 a day to do this with Hightstown.
What leaves would they pick up in the spring?
it would just be the debris, I guess. That's why, I don't know.
And we still have to figure out where we're going to put the leaves, because that's not included in their $1,400. They'll pick them up for $1,400, but we have to put them down somewhere.
Can't they just drive up the turnpike really fast?
Fly up the back.
I'm sorry, that's a public, that was not. I would assume that pickup would mean that they're going to put them somewhere.
No, in their quote, it's the last page in the packet. It says the cost will be $1,400 per day. Leaf disposal arrangements and costs will be Roosevelt's responsibility. However, we'll transport them to the disposal location of your choosing. So we still have to figure out where we're going to dispose of them.
Hightstown.
Okay, so noted. KTK is scheduled to repair in front of the firehouse doors. It's been a problem for quite a while. So the pavement just keeps coming up. It blocks the doors to the firehouse, and it just keeps getting worse as the trucks go over it. Mm-hmm. So they gave us an estimate of $2,650. Now, do we have to approve that fund?
I believe we approved that.
We did approve it. Okay, good. So they're going to do that as soon as the asphalt company opens up, because they're closed for the winter, and they should be opening soon, hopefully this week. There's also a storm pipe off 571 near the deli, and it's compromising the road. It's a pretty big hole. It's pretty dangerous. We've been discussing possibly getting some help from the county, since it's a county road, to put up a guardrail. And that's it.
Thank you. Mr. Tickman.
Okay. The Environmental Commission's request for a grant for $2,000 from Sustainable Jersey was approved, so we will be getting that $2,000 grant just as we did 2 years ago. So that's success in getting some funding. And, you know, so John was mentioning the pickup and the other activities that will be going on the attack on autumn olive, and the, what's the other thing?
Stream monitoring, or both on
stream
April
monitoring on the same day, that's right. The stream monitoring, so those activities are also going to be taking place.
What is involved in the stream monitoring?
The watershed ambassador is going to come and train our volunteers in how to perform the citizen science involved in stream monitoring. They will take some physical samples. They'll do some straightforward tests like measuring pH, dissolved oxygen. But they'll also be looking for benthic macroinvertebrates, and they'll identify those benthic macroinvertebrates.
From my show every day.
And certain invertebrates like the stonefly and the mayfly are associated with dirty waters, and then things like the dragonfly are associated with clean waters. So you have to identify the macroinvertebrate and look at the ratio of dirty bugs to clean bugs and figure out the health of the relative health of your stream. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Did they give you an idea of how long the training would take?
Yes, they're going to go all day. They're going to start in the morning, I think, 9:30, and they're going to go till 3:30. They'll stop for lunch, of course. The training is involved where you'll go out in the stream and you'll collect samples, and then you'll bring back the bugs here, and then we'll
identify the various bugs, put them in different categories, count them, and yeah, it's kind of cool. You should come.
What day?
April 9th.
10 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
It's exciting. If you've never held a benthic macroinvertebrate in your hand,
Can we have some fried ones?
I tie many artificial ones.
Wear waterproof boots.
Got them.
Yeah, we'll be trying to find Ephemeroptera, which are the clean bugs. But
Councilwoman Bond.
Nothing tonight, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Deborah, anything to report?
No, just that Kelly will be covering the two meetings in April. I have my purchasing conference at the beginning of the month and my clerk conference at the end of the month. So she'll be covering both meetings, but I will be in between helping her with the agenda. And she's on a training mission for the month of April for me.
Terrific. Thank you.
Finance Committee met with George Lang, our CFO, today. So I have a couple. When we pass the resolution hiring Mr. McGrath, and, you know, since John Marini had too much of a workload, we did not put any specifications in there or anything. He hasn't been paid yet. This is absolutely not on any complaint of his. I've never heard from Mr. McGrath. This came directly from George Lang, because he wasn't sure what his pay scale is, if it was supposed to be the same as Ralph Kirkland's, or how many hours, or anything. We just sort of hired him without anything in there about his salary. So we need to address Mr. McGrath's salary.
Yeah, George asked me about that when it happened. I said, well, I guess we'll start out with the salary that we were paying to Ralph. Which brings up the issue of, did we ever... No, currently.
Ah.
Well, currently that we're now paying to...
To John?
To John. And that brings up the question of whether we ever notified Ralph.
I doubt... Well, you could ask administration. I didn't.
Okay. Let me put a big note here.
But Mr. McGrath hasn't complained at all, but George, I think, feels bad that we haven't paid him at all.
Hey,
yeah. So... We need to take care of that, right? And I know I've seen him at a couple of different homes, so I know he's doing his job.
Yeah, he's doing a good job.
We're paying, what, $5,000 for Ralph, I think?
I do recall. It sounds about right, but I don't recall.
Was that, like, after raises? Because Ralph's been here for quite a few years now.
Yeah, but then we started giving his money to John.
John, I know.
Ralph,
it got very convoluted,
here,
I know.
Which boosted John's salary because he needed additional funds. The short answer is we better pull the ordinance and
take a look.
Make it a
well, the salary ordinance will give you a range, but whatever the last resolution, we'll give you the number.
Well, I'm thinking we should find out what we're paying Ralph now, or would be paying
would
Ralph
pay
now.
Or how much extra we gave John from Ralph's salary.
Yeah, which should be the same thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Find out
maybe
we're paying
should
Ralph decide
maybe
if we
right.
want to. Yeah, since he's spending more time
should
here, we might want to give him a little more. That's obviously up to you guys. But we have room for it.
Yeah.
Who do you want me to send the information to?
I guess
send
to me,
to
Peggy,
the
to
yeah, you can send me and to George.
And who's
to George?
Who's head of admin?
Stacy.
And to Stacy.
Mr. McGrath, that reminds me, yes, I did meet with him last week, and he's in the process of he's getting ready to issue the abandoned property list. So he just is, you know, making sure that he has the documentation for each of the properties that will be on it. But this is in process, so he will issue it, and then, you know, then turn it over in terms of the clerk, and then we can have it, you know, do what is required to be done with it.
I also sent them both of our code people, an email. I have to follow up and see if they got it. Apparently at 44 Pine, when they did the construction, for which they were fined various times, they took all of the the empty containers, et cetera, and threw them out into the woods.
Charming.
Yes. But the,
how do you know that? Just from seeing it, or people complained?
Because my next-door neighbor came in with pictures and said, look at what they've done. So I sent the pictures on as well, but it was pretty nasty. So let's see if we can get them to follow up on that. I'm sorry.
And actually, Stacy knows, has a good piece of news that Adlerman House is closed tonight, so it will no longer be abandoned.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Be moving in.
Very good.
Oh. Finance Committee discussed salaries of various employees. So at some point we need to have a discussion before budget, before we actually work on the budget, the council. There are some employees who are working, their 40 hours and then a huge amount of overtime. So it would really be better to let them stop at their 40 hours and hire a part-timer
mm-hmm.
to do that other work. So mostly from water, sewer, but we're really spending at least 10 hours a week for practically a year of overtime.
It would be useful if George would email me when that occurs, because I get no communication on that issue.
Well, I asked today. So
yes.
That's how I.
But I've asked him previously to let me know and to actually send me the timesheets, and he did that twice and then stopped. So.
Are they still charging time and a half for weekends and all that?
No, because we have different people on the weekends.
Well, they were nonetheless charging for a while. They were charging time and a half for weekends.
Yeah, they were. I didn't ask that today, but George is limited with how much time he can put in. That's mm-hmm. So it's it'd be a good idea to probably hire another part timer. And George actually thought we should talk to Toby. He might be the best one to either be able to recommend someone or know. Because some of that overtime is just simply driving around town and scanning the meters. So that's crazy for Toby to do mm-hmm. a regular job and then be reading the meters for overtime money. So we really need to think about hiring.
Jill, did you ever have the conversation with East Windsor about shared service
for
water, sewer?
Yeah, I emailed them and said we would get together, and then that was only a week ago.
Okay. Because that might go a long way to helping the problem if we're doing joint shared service with them anyway.
Right. Although they said they would help us out with shared service for emergencies and for other things, they felt that their current staff was fully utilized. So I'm not sure how far we'll get.
But their current staff might want to work after hours.
They might.
Or us under a different contract.
They might. We also are members of the I'm forgetting the name of it. It's an organization based out of Toms River area where they have sort of a clearinghouse of resumes of people. So that's where I was going to.
Yeah, I thought that would be the best idea to just advertise for this job.
But I'll do both. East Windsor, maybe on a short-term basis, and then a part-timer on a more permanent.
And whoever it is going to have to get used to our system, so if we're going to.
Right. eventually, I think Toby will retire.
What about Heightstown's utility? Do they have any? What is their situation with people?
Well, we already have a shared service agreement with them, and Kenny has been wonderful at coming over whenever we need assistance. But again, it's usually for an emergency situation, not for a routine.
Yeah.
They have fewer people in Heightstown than they do at the East Windsor facility.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They also have lesser equipment, which becomes a problem when we need. When we need to have a line scoped out or we need to have additional work done, they then have to borrow it from East Windsor for Heightstown for us. So.
Right.
Yeah. But I will look into both of those things, the part-timer from East Windsor and maybe at.
Great.
Right.
Yeah.
And just the final piece of information is that for the first, I don't know what will be after tonight's presentation or in the future, but for the first time in many, many years, water sewer turned a profit in 2015.
Okay. Black.
So. Sorry, you can't give your presentation tonight.
People are paying
give
their
us
bills.
Give us 2 weeks here, okay?
Yeah, but we're going to use that up.
I know.
End of report.
And for those of you who wonder in the audience, we don't actually turn a profit. We have a going forward surplus. Profit implies that somebody actually gets paid from this thing.
Right.
No.
Interestingly, we are in the process of refinancing our debt for the water and sewer. We had these bond anticipation notes, and now we're turning them into a longer-term financing with NJEIT. NJEIT has disallowed a certain portion of that of the money we spent, and so that may be what we use any surplus from last year to make up that difference.
How long have the bans been carried forward? Is it just a couple of years?
Yes.
Because you might be able to roll it into an MCIA bond as well, rather than have to pay it out of operating cash.
Right.
Because it's a lot tougher for us to claw back operating cash.
Yes.
Which we haven't had until this year.
Right. We'll look at both options. We'll talk with George. I mean, George Lang is obviously the person who would know the most about it. But yes. So a couple of things I wanted to talk about. I did want to ask on the Environmental Commission, are they planning to have a public hearing on the trail at their next Environmental Commission meeting? Did that come up at all? Because I talked about it with Diane Lowry, and we really felt that people in town should...
I believe there is a plan for having a hearing. Eitan did refer to that there would be.
That would be good. The litter pickup is, I think, scheduled for May 1st, and that also will be paid by Clean Communities money. And what I would like to do, instead of going into my usual lengthy report on the water and sewer, is to turn it over to Manuel Ponte. Manuel is the engineer that we hired at the beginning of this year, and he has been looking at our water and sewer needs, and he's prepared a preliminary assessment of the water and sewer. Just a little light reading for you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, by the way.
Thank you, Manuel.
Good to see you again. Thank you. Or at least it was.
Thank you.
Oh, of course. Thanks. No, you must read it.
Yep.
But who's to know?
Well, thank you very much. We're having you tonight. We're delighted to be able to work with you. I used to live in Bristol Township about 30 years ago, so we're always very fascinated by the history of water. I never had the chance to really interact with the Borough Council or anything, but here I am, 30 years later, having the opportunity to work with you, and I'm looking forward to being helpful and together to make some wise decisions going forward.
Yeah, there you go. So we can
that
hear
one, this one.
That one, yeah. That one might not read. This one will.
That one will,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said. That one might be much better. Kelly.
Thank you.
I'll try not to be too loud now.
It's mainly for the minutes. This is how it's all recorded. So.
I see. Okay. Well, we prepared this report over the last couple of months, working very closely with Toby Moore and with Jill, getting comments back from the preliminary draft report that we prepared. Toby's an amazing fellow. He's super busy, and I try to catch him where I can. and it's a wealth of information. So we try to capture that in this report. My concern tonight is that even though I came prepared to give you the highlights of the report, because the report is quite detailed and has a lot of information, I may bore you to death because of the some of the tables and numbers. So, well, this is a Google map of the borough. It's part of the report. It's next slide. The way the report is organized is in eight sections, if you will. And the purpose is you hired us to take a fresh look at your water and sewerage system and give you our opinion on the status of the infrastructure, how it operates, and as well as the deficiencies that we saw. And that's what we've done. And the purpose of the report is to capture those observations and findings, conclusions, and both a near-term and long-term recommendations that you might want to consider. Population is important in these reports because it allows us to compare those numbers that we develop with similar communities of your size. And they tell us if you are in line with other communities or out of line in some regards, and that kind of probes or prompts us to look further. And then we looked at the water supply treatment and distribution system. That consists of you have two wells, take groundwater, pump it to a treatment plant, it gets treated, mainly for the removal of iron, gets chlorinated for disinfection, and pumped to the system. The distribution system consists of the water tank and the water mains. And the function of the tank is very important because it allows the water plant to run at a steady state rate. And when there is a big demand, the water comes from the plant and the tank. And during periods of low demand, the water gets pumped to the tank. So that's the way you want to run a water plant, a very steady state, and let the tank pressurize the system, because you have to pump up to the tank, and that establishes the pressure in the rest of the distribution system, and also provides a reserve capacity in case of during high peak demand periods or events. We looked separately to the wastewater collection system, which consists of your sewage, the sewers. They collect the sewage from the homeowners, and that gets transported by gravity to the sewage treatment plant. And there it gets treated and discharged to the Assunpink Creek. Then we made some near-term recommendations. Near-term could be defined many ways, 1 to 5 years, some more critical to be done first, and some can be delayed. And the long-term are 10, 15, 20 years into the future. And then, of course, you have been working with the New Jersey Water Environment, with the NJEIT, for in their loan program. And we capture in the report where you are with those loans, where you've been, and where you might want to go. So starting with the water distribution system, it's about 4.5 miles of water mains. The water plant is over here, the water tank is over here, and the sewage treatment plant is at the other end of the bar. The water plant and the water tank are located at the highest point in the town. It's about elevation 200, whereas the rest of the borough is about 150 or so. And because sewage flows by gravity, the wastewater treatment plant is at the lowest point in the borough, near the and next door to the creek, to Assunpink Creek. The water distribution system is about 85, 90 years old. We believe that the piping is cast iron. The record drawings are not that complete. They don't give the size of some of the piping, the elevation, where they are located exactly. It's a more diagrammatic. But Toby has a good handle on where things are, and he can always find them. There are valves that are allowed to isolate the system if there is a main break. The water tank was recently painted. I believe that you've already awarded a contract to do some additional repairs. It seems to be holding up well. And the water plant, after the last set of improvements that you made, is working very well. The filters only have to be backwashed once a week, whereas with the old filters, Toby would have to backwash them several times a week because they were plugged. So that should be saving you some power and labor that by only having to backwash the sand filters once a week. Next. This is a photograph of the filter room. I don't know if you had the tour that you were talking about.
We have an open house, and I was thinking May would be a good time to have an open house at the water and sewer plant.
It's a very nice facility. You should be proud of money well spent. And Toby had a lot to do with how the tanks and the piping ended up being located during construction. He had some very good ideas, and you should get another 20, 25 years out of this plant. So it was money well spent. Next. This is where it gets a little boring. I have some tables in the report that I want to explain to you. And by the way, if you want to stop me because you have any questions, do so. I also propose that if after tonight, after you read the report, you have questions, let me know, and I can come back at a future meeting, and we can drill in into some of those areas that may be questionable or of concern to you. So here we summarize, based on the records available to us, what the water utilization categories are. And the table gives it in the gallons per year, gallons per day, and percent of the groundwater pumped from the aquifer to the water treatment plant. And you're going to see that abbreviation WTP, water treatment plant, and STP, sewage treatment plant. So let's look at the gallons per year. The records indicate that 30,538,500 gallons were pumped in 2015 from the aquifer. The water plant uses about 1 million gallons to backwash filters and do various other things within the water treatment plant. And that spent water gets piped to the sewer and it ends up at the wastewater, at the sewage treatment plant. So when we subtract the 1 million gallons that year from the 30 million gallons that were pumped from the aquifer, that leaves 29,518 of drinking water quality that is produced by the water treatment plant. You also meter what the customers use. Every customer has a water meter. And when we look at those records, the 15 million gallons were consumed and sold to customers. The remainder, 47%, or almost, again, 15 million gallons, is what we consider unaccounted for water. That means water that is not metered. Doesn't mean that it's wasted, but it's not metered. And the next slide, Jill, this is a new one that I developed since we met last week because we had that discussion. And I did not include this table in the report because there are a lot of assumptions and estimates. I didn't want to present the table with so many open-ended values. But let's look at gallons per year again. I don't know if that's metered. I forgot to ask Toby.
It's metered. Post office should be metered.
Is it
should be paying for their water.
But we'll check on that.
They're private, it's private property. It should be metered, of course.
Well, I made some assumptions to see, are these big numbers or this to be concerned, but in the end, one of the short-term recommendations that we're making is to install meters, whether you charge for the water or not. It would be good to know what is sure. being used so sure. that we can close this balance of water produced versus water consumed. So I made some assumptions. For the case of Borough Hall, I said staff of five, and you have some visitors during the day. So the staff maybe 20 gallons per capita per day, per person, per capita. And maybe 10 visitors that come during the day. You, I know you have Tai Chi and some, yeah. And some activities at Borough Hall. So I made some assumptions. The big number, though, is the 18,900 gallons per day, which is the equivalent of 7 million gallons per year, or 23% of your water produced that is estimated is used at the sewage treatment plant for flushing, the new grit removal equipment, mm-hmm. For injecting chemicals at various places in the plant. You need water to carry the concentrated chemical to where it has to go. That's a big number. Again, we are recommending that you install a meter at the water plant.
Why wouldn't you use recycled water at the sewer plant?
Exactly.
Well, if it were of a really, really good quality, you could use it. One of the big users is there are very fine nozzles that are used for flushing the screens that remove the grit. If the water quality has any solids, you're going to plug the nozzles. We can try it. And eventually, that should be a goal, to get a water effluent from the sewage treatment plant that you can use it instead of using 23% of the water that you spend a lot of money producing and pumping and filtering to do sewage work.
Right.
But right now, I wouldn't recommend it. So when we subtract this assumed values, because even the 7 million to me sounds very, very high. It's an estimate that Toby gave me. If we put a meter there, it wouldn't have to be a very big meter. We would know for sure what the sewage treatment plant is using. So based on that, we are left with about 25% of the total water produced, or 7 million, that is non-revenue producing water. Besides the categories above, there are other public uses that are not metered. For example, firefighting, flushing the water mains, open the hydrants to make sure that any iron that deposits, especially at the dead ends, can get flushed out. The sewers may be getting flushed once in a while. I don't know if you sweep the streets and do any street cleaning. I put zeros there because I don't know. So if in fact there's zero, we have 7 million gallons of water that perhaps is leaking out of the mains. And with the system this old, that would not be out of the question. In fact, I would have expected that. Last week I thought it was higher.
Right.
And then when Toby reminded me of the 18,900 gallons per day that he thinks he's using at the plant, the number came down. But last week it was 50% of the water I thought it was unaccounted for. So we're going to switch over now to the sanitary, the sewage part of your systems. Again, about 6 miles of sewers. Excuse me. They vary from about 4 inches to the homeowner. The homeowner owns that part of the pipe. They are responsible for it, but it's part of the system. And then the rest is 6-inch to 12-inch sewers throughout the town. Manholes. There is one lift station on Lake Drive. I believe that's, that you own. That's about the only one that I know. That otherwise, the sewage flows by gravity.
There's a lift station back here, and we have another one, don't we, or is that it?
Yeah, Parker's House has one, and the one here at Borough Hall. But, yeah, these are small
minor
compared to the lift station that's on legs.
Yeah. And the purpose of the lift station is at a low point, you have to lift it up to get it to the sewer so that then it can flow by gravity the rest of the way. And Kelly? We superimposed that sewer map on a USGS map that gives us tells us what sewers are run alongside streams and wetland areas, which are good candidates for what we call infiltration. That's a groundwater that can infiltrate into the sewer and ends up at a sewage treatment plant, and you have to treat it as if it were domestic sewage. And it also puts a strain on the sewage treatment plant during wet weather events where the flows can spike 5-6 times the average. So you have everything has to be sized to handle those flows. If that infiltration wasn't there, or the inflow that I will talk about a little later, everything at the plant could run a lot more smoothly. Another boring table. And this one is comparing the water utilization with the sewage production. We're looking at a balance because in the ideal world, for every gallon that you flush down the toilet, you would see a gallon at the sewage treatment plant. That's not that simple, and I'll try to describe why that is so. Again, in terms of gallons per year, 50 million gallons is water that is metered. It's being consumed by your customers. I estimated that 10% of that water doesn't end up in the sewer. It goes to watering lawns, washing cars, filling the swimming pool, that type of thing. That's my guess, but it's typical. So when I subtract 1.5 million for those kinds of water uses that don't end up in the sewer, we are left with about 13.5 million gallons a year that does reach the sewer. The sewer treatment plant uses that 18,900, we believe, of water that becomes sewage. So when I subtracted that 6.9 million from the 59 million that is metered at the effluent end of the plant leaves us with 52 million of sewage that gets to the plant and runs through the plant. Let's look at percentages now. The drinking water metered, I said, is 100% of the water. 10% doesn't reach the sewer. That leaves us with 90%. 46% is used by the wastewater by the sewage treatment plant. So the influent flow to the sewage treatment plant is 348% of the drinking water metered by the customers. So, like I said before, for every gallon of water metered by the customer, 0.9 gallons should reach the sewer, but in fact that you're getting 3.5 times. So that water is coming in from somewhere else. I looked at the highest flow for the month, for the 12 months in 2015. And that's the day out of 365 days in 2015, where we had the highest flow for that month. And that's what I call the max flow day. So in January 15th, or in January of 2015, the max flow day was 456,910 gallons that went through the sewage treatment plant. That same day, the corresponding water flow, metered flow at the home, at the customers, was 73,000 gallons. I subtracted the 10%, and that leaves us with 65,700 gallons that would end up in the sewer. That leaves 391,210 gallons that is coming from somewhere else. And I called it infiltration and inflow component. Infiltration is water that enters the sewer on a steady basis and is dependent on the how high the groundwater is at that location. And it's pretty much seasonal, but it's constant. Inflow we define as water that comes in directly as a result of a wet weather event, rain or a snow melt, that type of thing, that floods an area, enters the sewer system either through manholes, crack pipes, illegal, I don't know if it's illegal in the borough for people to connect sump pumps to the sewer and roof leaders and that type of thing. But in some communities, there are ordinances prohibiting against that because that inflow is immediate. You get it rains and somebody has a wet basement problem, but the sump pump goes on, and until it subsides, it is pumping and it gets to the plant within minutes or hours, depending on how far from the sewage treatment plant that home is located. So infiltration is steady. Inflow is more sporadic and a higher contribution. We calculated what we call the inch miles for the sewer system in the town. And that takes the length of the sewer in miles and multiplies it by the diameter of the sewer. And we come up with this, and then that's in the denominator. We divide the gallons per day in the numerator, and it gives us some numbers that we can compare to what is considered reasonable or not. So you have about 59 inch miles of sewer in the borough. And dividing the 391,210 INI flow by that 59 inch miles, we come up with 6,608 gallons per day per inch mile. That's on the high side. And we did that for every month in 2015. March was the highest. The peak day had a flow of 551,285 gallons. That's about over three times the average. And that results in an INI of 487,000 and gallons per day per inch mile, 8,233. So it's even higher. And we have the 6 months after June in the next slide. Yeah. And July is summer now. It's a drier period. It doesn't rain as much. And you can see that the gallons per day per inch mile was reduced quite a bit, whereas in the previous slide we were catching the winter thaws and the spring. So you would expect that the INI flows would be higher. So that's consistent with this. I like to look at graphics, and maybe some of you do. So I plotted those. SDP influence sewage flows on the max day for those months. And that's the plot on the top. The one in blue is the water treatment plant water produced. And the one in the bottom is the water consumed. So now we're going to work from the bottom up. If the green is the water... Thank you. If the green is the water that was metered, 90% of it would end up in the sewer, we assume. That's a lot less than what the plant produced, and we saw that slide before. This is just a graphic. But I think that what drives it, the point of the infiltration and inflow contribution, is the upper curve, which you can see that if the green is the water metered, we have quite a bit of excess water that's getting in from somewhere, and I think it's this is INI. This is it's one day every month, so these are totals. We don't know what's happening during the day at the plant. during dry weather periods, the flows coming to the sewage treatment plant are not steady. People get up in the morning, they take a shower, they use the restroom, they prepare breakfast. So an hour later, half an hour later, from 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, you see a peak at the plant. People go to work, then there is a lowering of the rate, and in the afternoon picks up again. And every community has its unique footprint as far as how water is used and sewage generated. So the next slide captures that month of March of 2015. And you can see during March that this one here, this line on the bottom is the water delivered and metered. The one on top is the minimum flow that was measured at the sewage treatment plant during that month. The green is the average for the month, and the top is the max. And the plot is what happened between March 1st and the 30th. You can see that spike, and that's a maximum day. During that day, if you were to look in more detail, the peak could have been 2-3 times higher yet, because this plot only captures the maximum volume at the end of the day that went through the plant. But to get there, it could have been a low period and then a real big spike. We don't capture that because your sewage treatment plant doesn't have any flow charts that would monitor what's happening during the day. And that's one of the recommendations that we have. You already have the meter. Adding a recorder would not be a big expense, and it would help answer a lot of questions. The infiltration and inflow, some of it occurs in your system, in the sewers, but a lot of it can also take place at the homeowner's property. And it could be a combination of some pumps, as I mentioned before, basements, they have floor drains in some cases, if they are subject to getting any water accumulation. Downspouts are connected sometimes to the sewer for convenience rather than let it run over the grass. It could be crack pipes. Usually sewers on the streets are constructed of better quality, and contractors that are just produce a better product than sometimes plumbers or whoever the builder used to make those house connections. So if they are 60, 70, 80 years old, they are also subject to cracks and root intrusion and water to get in within the homeowner's property. And that can be found with dye testing, smoke testing, if you are in the mood to find out where there may be some INI coming in from private properties. I found this old drawing, and frankly, there are gaps in how this whole system started back in, this is 1964, so it had already been upgraded a couple of times. But I just wanted to illustrate where you were back in 68 and where you are now. Over the years, you have made upgrades and improvements, some of them driven by the DEP, because you require a higher degree of treatment, and some, I'm sure, it was things that you wanted to improve. So the next one is just a schematic of what your sewer treatment plant looks like now. And the point that I wanted to make is that even though the flow is low, 150,000, 160,000 gallons per day, there are 5 million gallon per day plants that have the same processes that you have here now. They're smaller. You have smaller tanks, smaller pumps, but the headaches of running a sewage treatment plant that Toby knows well are the same. And I'm amazed that he can do it pretty much single-handedly. He's an amazing fellow. And plus, he also handles the water side of the business. So he always has an answer. I just have to be smart enough to ask him. So that's just to illustrate. And maybe I'll take the opportunity to to run you through what how the flow got through the plant, so that when I show you some pictures later, which are more easier to watch than this, you will understand where things are. The sewage enters here, and sewage treatment is a matter of removing solids that come in the sewage. Some of them settle out readily. Some of them are dissolved, and they are in solution. So we need microorganisms in a trickling filter, in this case, to digest the nutrients in the waste and grow and thrive and become large, so they settle out too. So in the end, it's a matter of finding different ways for solids to be created and to be settled out so that it can be removed as sludge. And the sludge, in your case, is trucked hauled away to a landfill. So sewage comes in, grit is removed, coffee grind, sand, things of that sort. It's amazing what ends up in the sewers. Then, unfortunately, the sewage that reaches the plant by gravity has to be pumped up to the primary clarifiers. Ideally, you would only pump it once if you have to, and then it will run by gravity from that point on. Here it gets pumped, goes to the primary clarifiers by gravity, trickling filters by gravity, and after that it has to be repumped to the final clarifiers, additional settling operations. And this drawing I borrowed, maybe at one time you intended to put filters, but they're not there now. Something to consider down the road. And then it finally flows by gravity to the Assunpink Creek. In between, there is chemical feed, there is a recycling going on. Sludge has to be pumped from the clarifiers to a central location where it can be hauled away. So that's basically the process. The picture on the left is an elevated manhole, and the Assunpink Creek is not far from here, right, Jim?
Yes.
And it's
long empty box creek.
This is just outside of the sewer treatment plant. The reason the manhole is elevated is because that area is probably subject to flooding, and so that the water doesn't get in through manhole covers. It's higher than ground. This is your easement. So your 12-inch trunk sewer runs along that area. That's where there are no trees, so you can maintain the sewers. And there are other manholes every 350 feet or so that we don't see from these photographs. The sewage enters the plant at this influent manhole, and already Toby is adding chemicals to help the settling process. This plant uses a lot of chemicals to help the solids settle out. And I tell you why I think that is the case. Next, this is the new grit removal equipment that was installed not too far out recently, that takes the grit and screenings, puts it in a dumpster so it can be hauled away. The manhole that you saw before is in the background over here. This building is a chemical building where you store and feed chemicals from. If you haven't been to the plant, I'll show you some pictures of deteriorated concrete that should be addressed. It's unsafe for one, and the longer you let it go, the less chance that you can rehabilitate it. You're going to have to replace it, so it will be more costly. The photo on the left is the primary clarifiers. They're steel above ground, so the water has already been pumped up to the top of those tanks, and we wait for the solids to settle out. Unfortunately, the pumps that get the sewage into these tanks are constant speed pumps. You have two pumps. One is 100% standby in case the other one fails. So one pump has to handle whatever sewage comes into the plant, from your minimum flow at night when there is very little sewer being generated, to those peaks that you get during the day during a wet weather event because of the INI. When that pump, so they're constant speed. When it comes on, it pumps as if it was pumping your highest peak flow, and it blasts through the settling tanks and disturbs the settling process. So the solids are trying to settle out. Every time that pump comes on, they get disturbed. And so you don't get a good settlement. And the only ways you get settlement is by adding a lot of chemicals, coagulants, that help with that situation. But that's no way to run a plant, because you're spending a lot of money, about $50,000 a year in chemicals, and a lot of power, because when that pump comes on, it has a big inrush, and you have to pay for that power demand. You already saw the influence screen that was installed recently. Thank you, Kai. At the top of those clarifiers, you have to remove floatable matter, scum. There is a rotating mechanism that you see on the, you only see the top, that is removing the scum. But it also has a collector at the bottom that pushes the sludge into a central hopper that you can pump it out of and get rid of it. From the primary clarifiers, then you go into these trickling filters. These are about 8 feet high tanks, partly above ground, partly below ground. They are filled with plastic media that provides a surface for microorganisms to grow. And as the water trickles down through this media, the microorganisms, they eat it up, they grow, they thrive, and eventually they slough off of the surface and end up as sludge. In the ideal world, all these nozzles would be flowing out about the same rate. Apparently, some of them are plugged, but there may be some reason why they are not flowing evenly across the surface of the media. And then on the right are the five pumps. Three of them are final clarifier pumps, and we go to the final clarifiers next. And two pumps recirculate water that has gone through the filters back to the filters to make sure that these rotating arms, just like a sprinkler, are continue to distribute the water evenly. These filters, they seem to be dead. There is no microbial activity going on there. And the reason for that, I believe, is that a lot of the food that would keep these microorganisms thriving gets settled out with the chemicals in the primary clarifier. So in the primary clarifier, it's only supposed to remove the heavier inorganic matter, when in fact it's removing the what we call the biochemical oxygen demand, which is the biodegradable organics that these microorganisms need to do what the trickling filter was designed to do. There's no, you don't see any growth, you don't see any flies, you don't see any activity. So I think.
What would be an example of that, of the organisms that should be in there?
It could be little worms.
They should be coming from.
They are naturally in the sewage, and they should be turning this media like green and brown.
Right, that I understand. I just wondered where the worms and those organisms come from. That's
it's
not in there.
In your poop.
Right, that's what I wanted to know. Okay.
Don't
put
that in the
middle. I don't know, it makes it easier to understand.
But this media gives it a place to grab onto, and then they are happy when they have the food, so they love it. And the only reason why they don't plug up is because the water gets recirculated to a high rate that it forces them to loosen up. And then they end up in the bottom of the trickling filter, and from there they continue on to the final clarifiers, which is our next slide. These are the final clarifiers. Again, above ground, metal. The water has to be pumped again. So the same condition that I explained before. When those pumps come on at constant speed, you blast through those solids that are trying to settle out, and they don't. So now Toby counteracts that difficulty by adding more chemicals, coagulants and different things. It's amazing. You're meeting the permit every month. You have removal efficiencies are 98-99%, where the permit only requires that you remove 85. But when you're using chemicals, you don't have the control to fine tune it to that degree. So he has to overdose, and then from there it goes into this chlorine contact tank, where you add chlorine, sodium hypochlorite, like bleach, and you have to provide a certain detention time based on your permit for any pathogens to be killed before it's considered treated to be discharged to the river, to the creek. And the last step is this cascade aerator, because your permit also requires that you have a minimum oxygen, dissolved oxygen in the wastewater, so that when it reaches the stream, it doesn't cause a depletion in oxygen and harm the creatures that live there. So, and then from there, I think it's one more step. It's this effluent box. The sewage comes in and spills over that box as a weir, goes to the right. This device here is an ultrasonic level sensor. It measures the level of the water, puts it through an equation, and converts it to flow, gallons per day or gallons per minute. And that's the flow that we rely on to tell us how much sewage went through the plant that day. That effluent box, according to Toby, is very concerned that it's going to collapse. It's 25 feet deep. I haven't seen any drawings of it, but that's what Toby is telling me, that it's about 25 feet deep. It's either cedar or redwood. And if it were to collapse, it's going to be catastrophic, and it's going to take the pipe that cups into it from the side with it, and it could be a major expense because you're going to have to bypass flow and provide temporary treatment some other way. So that's one of my short-term recommendations that be addressed. It would require a crane to pick that whole thing up, and by that time it would have prefabricated a replacement and then drop it in the same day so that we don't have to pay for the crane twice, and you're back in business. But it's something that needs to be budgeted for and taken care of.
So it's original to the plant, and it's made of wood, and the wood is now 90 years old.
80 years
eight.
Old.
Eight.
I'm here. We got another
10
years.
I youngster.
Now we will probably replace it with fiberglass.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there are controls. I want you to appreciate that there is a lot of technology that goes behind the running this plant. The alarms are monitored here. There is some a lot of recordings. Some of it is no longer in use. The PLC is obsolete. So it's no longer serviced, so Toby has to work around not having a logical controller to provide some of the original controls that the plant did at one time. The tank on the left was the original, what's called an Inhofe tank. I had to go back to my college textbook to understand what the thing did, because I haven't seen one. This is the first one I've seen, other than the ones in the textbooks. It was like a one big septic tank. Now it's being used just to store sludge. So it's about 80 years old. And when you hold sludge, hydrogen sulfide is emitted. And in a moist environment, it turns into hydrochloric acid, sulfuric acid. And that attacks the concrete. So the top 2 feet that are exposed to this gas is being generated. It's all corroded. Last week we were talking about, Toby is very concerned about this open tanks, and they have to climb up here when they come to haul the sludge away. He's concerned for himself and also for the person that comes to do the hauling, that he's going to fall into this, to one of these, through one of these holes, and they're 25 feet deep, full of sludge. So unless somebody's there with a rope very quickly, that could be a real catastrophe. So we were talking about covering these tanks, and I said, Toby, the taps are so bad, in such a bad shape, I wouldn't be able to put any brackets and trust them to hold somebody standing up on top. So this is another area that needs attention. For disinfection, they use liquid chlorine instead of chlorine gas, which is good. Sodium hypochlorite. It's just a more concentrated version of your Clorox at home. And that is for the purpose of killing the microorganisms. It's a sludge pump that pumps the sludge from the various hoppers to the sludge storage tank. Delta Flag is one of Toby's favorite coagulants. It's very expensive, but it does the job. And the other ones are just some pictures of a deteriorated concrete that should be attended to. Little bit, you know, this is one of the trickling filters. The concrete is showing signs of damage. And what happens that you don't see, you see the top that shady in white. Over the years, the moisture, the concrete is porous, and it penetrates the concrete and it rusts the steel that reinforces the concrete. And you don't see it, but I wouldn't be surprised if the top 2 feet of this tank would have to be cut off and rebuilt if you wanted to continue using trickling filters, just to keep it from continuing to deteriorate, because that corrosion keeps getting deeper and deeper, and one day the wall collapses. And that's another picture of that trickling filter tank that is exposed. Some parts are buried, so we don't know what's going on here, but you can see the concrete flaking off. I think we saw that one already. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to be closing with some conclusions, recommendations. The good news is that you have excellent water quality. Your groundwater is, you can probably drink it without any problem, but the state requires that you remove the iron and disinfect it. You recently upgraded the water treatment plant, so it's in great shape. And the elevated water storage tank is old, but it's being repaired. And ideally, you would have another backup to this plant, to this tank, because eventually you have to take it down for service. The last time you painted the tank, providing temporary storage was very costly, according to Toby. Probably cost more than the actual painting of the tank. So if you had a backup tank or system, there are other ways to accomplish the same goal. If there is a failure of the tank, or if you have to take it down for service, painting, whatever, you would have that backup. That's a long-term recommendation, because there are so many other things that you need to do, in my opinion, before that. And the good news also, as far as the wastewater collection and treatment, is that you're meeting all of your NEGIPTIS permit that in many municipalities is a nightmare. And meeting those permits is not just doing it, but then you have to report it. And how Toby gets it all done, it's amazing. The not so good news on the water supply side is that variance that I pointed out to you between the potable water produced and the potable water consumed that is metered. Is it leaks, or is it, when we add up all these other non-metered unaccounted for water, and the leaks are within a range that you can live with without doing any proactive repairs? And We need data to close that gap. And then on the wastewater collection and treatment side, The not so good news, I have three or four slides that follow this one, is that initially that variance between the water consumed and the water discharge to the sewer, this I&I problem that is causing tremendous inrush of water, clear water, not sewage, but comes through the sewage, but it's just the groundwater to the plant that is causing difficulties with settling and using a lot of power and chemicals. Then we have the deteriorated infrastructure that I show you some of the concrete that needs attention. The fact that the sewage flow is approximately four times the water that is discharged to the sewers. It's again, that's a lot of infiltration in flow that you are treating. And this four times has to be refined if we put this flow recording that I'm suggesting that we do. It's not a big expense, and it would answer a lot of questions and give us a good solid ground to select the right pumps, because the next bullet before I get there, the peak sewage flow for a municipality of this size during the day could be 5 to 6 times the average, because the system is so short that when somebody flushes at the far end of from the wastewater treatment plant, it reaches the plant within an hour. So, and anyone in between, if they all flush at the same time, it hits the plant immediately and very close together. In a big city, it's more, it's tempered down, but here is, well, we don't have any daily recordings to tell you 5 to 6 times is what you have. All I'm saying is that rule of thumb for a municipality of this size, 5 or 6 times will not be out of the ordinary. If we compound these 5 or 6 times diurnal peaks to those wet weather events that are due to the infiltration and inflow, it could be much higher. That's why I think it's so important to get a good reading of what's actually happening. The third bullet is the constant speed pumping that we have for the influent pumps and the effluent pumps impacts solid settling, and is causing it causes difficulty. Fortunately, you meet permit by using coagulants and lots of it. That results in high operating costs for chemicals and power, because you have to do a lot of pumping, and a high potable water use to be confirmed through metering, see if in fact the plant is using 18,000 gallons or 19,000 gallons a day. This is just a summary of the chemical use at both at the sewage treatment plant and the water treatment plant. The records are not that clear what goes where, but I made an assumption that 50% of the Klemfoss coagulant goes to the water treatment plant and half goes to the water treatment plant. And based on that, in 2015, you use about $50,000 worth of chemicals to treat 140,000 gallons average flow. That's a lot of chemicals. You're running the plant as a water plant. You're not relying on the microorganisms in the trickling filter to do the bulk of the work, because the filters are not functioning the way that they could. So, if we could turn around the plant to work better, the chemical use would go down, and it would maybe save half or more than half of your chemical cost that could go towards making some improvements or pay back the investment initially. To clearly the thing that we recommend that you do very quickly is to equip the pumps with the variable speed drives. And what the variable speed drive does, instead of running the pump at a constant speed every time it runs at a reduced speed to match the rate of flow coming into the plant. So you're saving on power, but you're also not disturbing the tanks by forcing that rush of water every 15 minutes or whenever those pumps come on. Continuing on with the wastewater collection and treatment, the structural integrity of the concrete tanks, trickling filter, sludge holding tank in particular, and the effluent box, that worries me based on what Toby fears, that it's going to collapse on us. That should be taken care of quickly. The treatment plant, sewage treatment plant, requires major treatment process improvements to reduce O&M costs and requires structural repairs, particularly that effluent box. We're recommending that you install water meters at the sewer treatment plant, at the borough hall, at the school, I don't know about the firehouse, whether no. But any user of water that is unaccounted for a very low cost, you can install a meter and then we know what's being used, even if you don't charge for it. Then we, with Toby, I think we can estimate how many times a year he does flushing of hydrants through hydrants and sewer cleaning and things of that sort that is not metered, but we can estimate what that might be. And with that, we should be able to resolve this unaccounted water use volume that we don't know where it goes. To do that, we should install an effluent meter that monitors the flow continuously, not just a total at the end of the day. I would like to suggest to installing, renting some composite samplers and locate them at various points in the plant for a week or 2 weeks and analyze what's happening and what these different processes are doing towards removing biochemical oxygen demand, total suspended solids, ammonia, nitrogen, and phosphorus. And these are the ones that I mentioned because they are in your permit. You have limits that you have to meet. Otherwise, you're in violation, and then the fines and visits begin. You're complying. And it's amazing that this plant can meet a 0.26 part per million total phosphorus. And it's through the use of chemicals. A plant with just a trickling filter and no chemicals would never be able to meet that limit. And that's why somebody probably thought some years ago to put some kind of filtration at the end of the process to remove the remaining solids and take the phosphorus and the copper that you're going to be hit with in the next permit. It's a new one. You have the DEP wants to put a limit on how much copper you can discharge to the arsenic pink. Fortunately, and because of the chemical use, you're meeting the copper limit already, even though you know it's not in your permit yet. But Jill and I have been talking about doing a water quality study to see if that limit is too stringent and it can be relaxed, because our goal is to be able to operate the plant without so much chemical. So if we are saddled with another low limit, it may force us to continue to run the way we are. We should investigate and locate the sources of high infiltration and inflow. I would start with the 12-inch trunk sewer that runs along the river. That would be the first candidate to take a look at. And as far as improving the process of the plant, by far, the best thing that you could do in the near term is to replace two of the three effluent pumps with an equipment with controllers and variable speed drives. The two existing influent pumps, they are about 8 years old. They're flights. They're a Swedish make. They are very good. Toby has had very good experience with them. So essentially, they are brand new, but they're constant speed. So it would be very easy to equip them with variable speed drives to slow down the flow that goes through the plant. The bottom of the trickling filter has this concrete supports to hold the media up and provide an airspace underneath for air to be able to circulate and ventilate the microorganisms and keep them happy. And that concrete is crumbling. And Toby's seeing chunks of concrete coming out of the trickling filter in the wet well, in the pit where these pumps draw from. And the other day he showed us a picture of one pump that had a big piece of concrete stuck at the on the suction, and he had to take it apart and pull it out. Smaller pieces are going to go right through the suction, and they're going to hit the impeller, which is rotating at 1,200 revolutions per minute. And frankly, if there is any impeller left after that, it will be a miracle. So a very inexpensive preventive measure would be to install a basket strainer, so when that water comes from the drinking filter before it reaches the pit where the pumps are, to remove any debris that's coming through. I'm getting a price from one of the vendors, and I'll pass that along to you and to Toby, Joe. And then I would like to recommend that I bring a structural engineer from my firm to take a look at the tanks and make an assessment of the structural integrity of the tanks and what could be done to slow down the decay, but also to take a look at the effluent box and see what can be done and come up with an estimate so that you have some dollar figures to work with. Thank you for your attention. And if you have any questions, as I said, if after reading the report you have questions, just let me know. I'll come back another time and we can have a workshop and explore some ideas that you may have. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Read the book.
They have to read the book. You should really look at the recommendations, which start, I guess, on page 27. And there's the near-term recommendations and then the longer-term recommendations. And you saw a summary of those. There are some things which we should do, like repairing the concrete of the steps and all of those things, just for the health and safety of our operators. But there's other things that we kind of have to do so that we don't damage the plant further. So all those are outlined in there. Manuel went through them with Toby and I last week. They're not necessarily in order of what we do first, but they're all listed there. This was the first thing that we wanted Manuel and his firm to do, was to provide us with an assessment of the what's there now and what would they recommend we go forward with. So we'll come up with some kind of capital improvement program and we'll start working on this. But there are definitely some things we have to do this year. Mm-hmm. Question?
I just wanted to point out that when you kept mentioning sump pumps as a possibility, I don't know how many sump pumps are in Roosevelt, but most people don't have a basement here. So I don't know if that would be a large part of the problem, because there's very few basements in the whole town.
Yeah,
no base. Vast majority.
Well, I have both
have
a basement and a sump pump, so if that's what you're looking to see, is it mine? But you have a limited number of options.
Very small minority.
But it is really important that we make sure that there is an ordinance in place so that anyone with a sump pump is discharging not to the sewage treatment plant.
You are not currently permitted to discharge into the sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
If you bother to go for a COO.
Mm-hmm.
They will not grant the COO if you pump into the system.
Good.
And new construction is not permitted. As long as the construction officer can get in there, you're not permitted to do it.
Good.
And I'm probably the only person in town who can speak with authority on that. Okay. Thank you for the reports, council committees. Old business, fire department equipment storage. They left. But they did send a text saying, and they also had some applications for us to look at, but they have to go pick up their children. But we do have, I believe, three proposals on the back for mobile racks. I believe we determined at our last meeting that mobile racks were the better way to go because we could use them in other places. and I see a bid of $3,500. There was another one in here. Okay, 3039. I think that was it, right?
Mm-hmm. There's three there.
Is there?
Yeah, that would be three. There's, yeah, FF1.
Yeah.
FF1
oh,
is 3,508.
From Sage Dave. Here. And then you have approved fire.
Wait, FF1 is 3,500. Oh, I see, okay.
Yeah.
No? Wait.
Right. FF1 is 3,500, and on the back of that you see the 3,380.
Right. Oh, but it comes out to the same number.
35.
Within $3, okay.
Right. And then the next to the last page of your packet shows the state safety quote at 30, 39, 82. They did acquire the three quotes.
Right. And these are all essentially the same as if I remember correctly. Considering this day of technology, let's put this aside for the moment. I'll call him. Leaf pickup, I believe we discussed. Mm-hmm. Time for a special meeting, May 16th. That's to approve various bond documents.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do we have a majority available on the 16th?
We do. The only one that didn't respond was John?
It's possible. But I'm available.
Okay. So we're good to rock and roll. I just need to know what time you guys need to want to have the meeting. It's going to be a very brief meeting. I know in the past we did a payment of bills at 8 o'clock in the morning and it was done and everybody went on their way. Would you like to do something like that again? Or
What day is the 16th?
It's a Monday. Monday. I think we should just do it at 7 o'clock, which is our normal meeting time, mm-hmm. and just come and have a short meeting and go.
Anybody else feel like 8 o'clock in the morning?
I'm at work already at 8, and I don't get home till after 5:30.
Okay. 7 o'clock?
Okay. May 16th at 7 p.m. It's essential that these documents be approved at that meeting on that evening. So you really have to make a concerted effort to attend.
How many people have to be here?
2/3 majority.
So you need at least four, but you don't want to leave a margin for error.
So I will be here.
Councilmember Malkin will be out of
town.
Yeah,
I'll be out of state.
But the rest of them will be here.
But you
and
can
it's
call
a majority of a full council.
Yeah, you
we
can
already
call
have one vacancy. So
but
nobody
it's still
else
the
can
same
be
number.
Absent.
Or can
right
you call
yeah
me? Well, what time? 7?
Well, we have everybody showing up.
Yeah, as long as everybody else shows up, we're okay.
It'll be 4 o'clock for me, so you can try. You know, because you said you might not be here, right?
I'm going to try and be there because, yeah, I have to be there on Tuesday for Daniel's graduation, so I should be back.
Oh.
I mean, we could do it at 8 in the morning, but then if we called you and
it'd
you're
in
California, it'd
be
5
in
the
morning.
Yeah. So, so it's better, I think, at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
We'll call you at 4.
So I'm just doing a quick text to the fire folks.
I can report on one other thing. There was a Lake Drive resident that had a blockage in their sewer line. It was determined to be a borough problem, and we are reimbursing them for having that jetted.
As well. What was the amount?
I don't remember the amount. We have paperwork on it.
Make a motion.
Yeah, we need the details, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then did we ever find out where that pipe went?
Yeah. Toby says he knows
oh
where.
He did?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what happened after that.
Not when I spoke to him, he didn't.
When Manuel and I met with him, he said he knew where it went.
Okay.
Downstream of the police station.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to open up for public comments with the understanding we're going to come back, assuming we get a response on the firefighters.
I also have a proposal for the something else to happen in the month of May.
A year ago?
No, this month of May.
Would you like to make it before we go into public?
Sure. The month of May turns out to be the National Wildlife Federation's Garden for Wildlife Month, and there is a Mayor's Monarch Pledge, which I would like the mayor to make.
Am I pledging not to kill butterflies, to wear a crown? What am I pledging here?
It would be you would issue a proclamation to raise awareness of the decline of the monarch butterfly. And
sure. I hereby pledge to do whatever to...
We'll do it in May, if you're agreeable.
I'm agreeable. Since the fire department is not answering my text, but they did happen to return, you have three proposals in front of us for racks. Are they substantially identical?
I know there's yeah.
Okay, there's some discussion about you had to add in one of them or...
No, all that got taken care of. It's all...
Okay. Then we would want to have a motion to pick the lowest bidder on the rack.
So moved.
Which is Safe Tea, and it's $3,039.84. Second.
Ms. Bona.
Aye.
Mr. Impelazzari.
Aye.
Ms. Lapode.
Aye.
Ms. Malkin.
Aye.
Mr. Tipton.
Aye.
Said and done.
Okay, new business still?
Sure.
Okay, yeah, I have two quotes here for landscaping. For this season, a property maintenance, land maintenance. Excuse me. One is from Acer Lawn and Landscape, and the other from Dr. K's Design and Landscape. Estimated cost from Acer, it would be $7,835 for the year. But keep in mind that these estimated costs are for an estimated 15 cuttings. Things may be more or less depending on the growing season. And the same goes for Dr. K's, which would be approximately $6,785.
And what's the price per extra cut? Do they have
it on there? Price per cut for Acer is $435, and for Dr. K's is
$400. Dr. K's is lower.
Yeah, but we went through this last year. Do we have to take... There were problems last year. There's problems every year.
Yes, Public Works would like.
K, he wants to have the specs amended because of branches. That would be extra money. But he didn't have that in yet.
Huh.
We don't have to take the lowest.
Yeah.
No, you take the most advantageous price and other factors being considered.
And in view of the fact that we just announced what the price of his competitor was, I don't think it's, if he's saying that his bid was incomplete, mm-hmm. right? He now knows.
He's saying what?
His bid is incomplete. That's what he's saying. In other words, he didn't include the cost of picking up branches. He wants to revise his bid. But we're now going to allow him to revise his bid after we have announced what his competitor is bidding. Mm-hmm. So.
And there were problems with the lawn mowing last year.
I'm with Peggy on this one. There were problems last year with Dr. K. We had plenty of weeds at both the water and sewer plant. I think I went out at one point and hacked through some stuff so that we could get to a piece of equipment. I would like to award this bid to Acer.
And I'd just like to say there were large swaths of ground where Dr. K mowed one half and then didn't come back for a week later for the other half, so it was always uneven.
So the motion would be that you'd like to take the higher price bid based on the quality of the work, the fact that the lower bid was incomplete. You good with that?
Mm-hmm.
Who's making that motion?
Jill just did, didn't she?
Did you make that motion?
Yes, I made that motion.
I thought that's what I heard her say.
You want to hold off before we vote?
Just double check my memory.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's what the statute says.
Yeah, it's not a sealed bid. It's just a quote.
It's most advantageous. That's
yes,
the
based
the
on test. Price and other factors.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Let's call the roll.
Ms. Bona.
Aye.
Mr. Infelizzeri.
Aye.
Ms. Lapode.
Aye.
Ms. Malkin.
Aye.
Mr. Ticton.
Aye.
Okay, great. We now go into public comment. Does anybody from the public have anything they'd like to say? Bob?
I have a question. What's the agenda for the special meeting coming up?
Can you
we have... The question was, what's the agenda for the special meeting coming up? The bond that we approved at the last meeting that rolls up all of our bands into the NJEIT bond requires that we pass certain resolutions, and they have to be passed in certain portions of the deal with NJEIT have to be approved, and they have to be approved, unfortunately, within a certain time frame, which is why we have to call a special meeting. It doesn't – the last public meeting – before their requirement is too early, and the one that follows is too late. So it's just to meet with the NJEIT's timing.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Chris?
Yeah.
Mr. Zuck? Chief? Whatever?
Yes. I would like to present two new applicants for the fire department to the council.
And you've interviewed them, and they live within 5 miles and all that good stuff?
They both live on Farm Lane.
That's close.
Okay.
As you know, under the new rules, we take those, we look at them, and approve them at the next meeting.
Yep.
Okay.
Who do I give them to now?
If you could please give them to Deborah and she'll make copies for us, that would be great.
Thank you.
Yep. And also, too, when are we getting keys to the trailer?
As soon as we get the equipment in there. Yeah. Unless you want to...
Well, I can't get in there.
Right. Give them the keys tonight. Wait. Right. Trade them.
No, I don't have keys.
I want one of the keys to the fire truck so we can set that damn key. Not to the fire truck, to the chief's truck.
We need to set it.
We have a new key that's supposed to stay in here.
I'll give you one. I have 10 of them in the firehouse.
Okay.
So there's no reason to get a new
no
one made.
Well, we already have the new one made. All we have to do is click it.
You should have asked me before you went, and I would have gave you one.
You sound like my mother.
I know.
Anybody else from the public have any comments? Great. Do we need a closed session, Councilor?
None that I know of.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
To adjourn.
Thank you.
Second.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Closed?
Okay. I'll get you a key check. Can you get that letter up in your box?
I've not yet.